Your Steve Jones Show podcast is loading now. The Steve Jones Show podcast is sponsored by Sunbury Motors, North 4th Street in Sunbury, and Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf.
This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now, from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
And 15 in Hummel's Wharf and online at sunburymotors.com. Ford, Kia, Hyundai, best in new inventory, great pre-owned inventory with the Sunbury Motors guarantee and a terrific service department that backs all of it up. At Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury, Sunbury Motors, Kia, routes 11 and 15, Hummel's Wharf, and online at sunburymotors.com. Play-by-play, call of the day. The Phillies dial up the long ball.
Kyle Schwarber ready to lead off. First ball swinging, and there it goes. An ambush by Schwarber, and it's 1-0 Phillies.
That is the fifth first pitch home run hit in the postseason by the Phillies.
Here's Bryce Harper, the birthday boy, and he swings and lifts it high and deep, and happy birthday, pal! Harper with a monster drive deep into right center. It's 2-0 Phillies. Harper's fourth of the playoffs, and he's the fourth player to hit a home run in the playoffs on his birthday. That's a way to celebrate with a 420-foot rocket.
And those were the baseball version of bombs right there. Oh, boy. And then, I mean, again, I agree with Wheels. Give Arizona credit. They got a two-run homer, got another run across. They didn't, like, just go into the field position and leave. I mean, they made the Phillies work at the end to win it, which the Phillies did. But that is... that's a great... great opening win for the Phillies. Now you got to do it again. Do it tonight. It's on Eagle 107. Aaron Nola tonight. It's great having those two guys at the front in a short series. Means a lot. And there you are. Great defense last night. It was, like I said, Rojas. I was glad Rojas got a hit last night, by the way. I mean, anything they get out of him in the number nine spot, what a great bonus. I remember watching him in Williamsport. I'm like, oh, but this guy. Speed, it's not just the speed, but the routes he takes. I mean, this guy understands where the ball is going, and he judges it really, really well. So is there anything else that is bothering you?
No, I think we're good now.
You sure?
Yes. I'm all like, caught up, and I've got it all out of my system, at least for today.
I feel like the show is the version of having taking blood pressure medicine. Yeah. Thought I'd mention it. So... there you go. All right. So here we are. It's this is the talking part of the week. For Penn State, this will be back to work practice wise this week. The It's interesting because he brought up, it was asked of him about Drew Aller going back to Ohio. Now, I'll be honest with you, I hadn't really thought about it at all. He hadn't really thought about it at all, so he wasn't going to talk to him about it. Now he thinks that, you know, maybe you should sit down and at least talk to him a little bit about it before he goes, because when somebody tells me Drew's going to be like, hey, yeah, yeah, don't worry about it. He's an interesting guy to be around. He has a great personality for this. And he's appreciative of everyone around him. He doesn't blow off anybody. He's got a smile on his face. And when it takes, and it comes time to take command of what's going to happen, he takes command. And if they're running a drill where it's blocking versus pass rush, and he's not the one standing back there, he's standing off to the side, Bo's standing off to the side, it's usually one of the managers. They usually just have a blue dot out there, and the blue dot is what you're... Okay? He'll go up to all those linemen before they get going. He'll fire them up, get them going. You know, they want to win the drill. And that's the way he is. James talked about his parents today. Well, I've met his parents and I met his grandfather. You can see why he is the way he is. NIL writes a book, donates all the money to the kids in his hometown. Okay. So he is the kind of guy you would really like being around. And he's the kind of guy that, you know, Matt, you'd love having your kids being around. And he's a very talented player. They showed me a tape of him throwing before his, I think it was before his junior year. Before his junior year? Yeah, I think it was before his junior year. And you could see just a little more, like he was very straight over the top. Now when you watch him, he's not straight over the top. He's a little more to the side now. And he'll also use different arm angles. But when they were showing me the tape, this is during the preseason, they were showing me the tape up in the football office about him throwing the ball. And I think he was throwing the ball at his house. I don't think he was throwing the ball at his high school. And they're showing me how over the top, like, boom, straight over the top he was. And you watch him warm up. So, before the game, Jack and I went out in the field, and yes, I took the King with me. Okay. King got a big kick out of that.
I'm sure he did. That's fantastic.
Yeah, but he should. I mean, come on. You know, let's face it. It's my brother. And this is something that Jack and I have observed before, so there's no difference here. What I'm going to say, I think I've mentioned this before. He'll start out and he'll go through rotating hips, and it looks like Tiger Woods getting ready on the driving range. And then he'll throw, and then he'll go out to about, I don't know, the 40-yard line, and flat-footed throw the ball to the goal line. To one of the managers, usually it's Josh. And Jack was talking to him about grip because, of course, it was going to rain. And Drew said, no, he says, nah, grip in this weather is not so bad for me. Because Terry Bradshaw would take his index finger and he'd put it on the tip of the ball. Drew, like most quarterbacks, does not do that. But he also has, as you can imagine, at 6'5", big hands. So the ability, he says, no, he says, there's enough rough, this ball's rough enough, he was telling us. This ball's rough enough where he says, my hand can get around it and I have no problem. He knows he had no problem throwing the ball on Saturday. None. But the part about going back to Ohio, I'll be honest with you, I hadn't really thought about it. And then James said that he was interviewed. Now, I did three interviews today, and I was never asked about it. Okay. And evidently, James was asked about it three different times this morning. He's like, geez, I guess maybe I had to talk. Only because if they're asking him about it, are they asking him about it? They're asking James about it. They're probably asking Drew about it. So maybe it's something they need to bring up. Like, okay. I don't think it's any... Yeah. It's not a big deal. I don't know if it would be a big deal for Kyle McCord coming in here next year to play against Penn State. I think they're coming here next year, right? And... You know, he's from St. Joe's Prep, which is, what, 180 miles from here? Like I said, hadn't really thought about it. I guess that's on me for not thinking about it. There are a lot of things to think about when there's a game like this. And I guess I don't usually think too much about the outside stuff like that, because I get, you know, Jack and I talk about personnel, about the game, about matchups, things like that. You know, and I'm trying to think whether it's right or wrong that we don't think about it. Because we don't think it's a factor. I mean, it's not like the Allers aren't at games. They're at every game. So his family's always there, whether they're playing in Ohio, Pennsylvania, Illinois, wherever it may be. I don't know. I mean, you think about these things.
I do usually, but I guess I never really thought about this either. But so I guess that's also on me. But I think the stuff that's come out is kind of interesting. But
I don't really think it's any. It has nothing to do with the outcome of the game. I mean, it's so I didn't really think about it.
It's interesting because I didn't really get a full sense of how his recruiting process went, but after hearing about it, there really wasn't much to it. He was already he made his commitment to Penn State. He obviously was going to stay committed and didn't really flinch when Ohio State came back and apparently offered him something in September, 2 years ago?
Yeah. And you know what happened is that other schools then, as you know, what happened was, you know, Penn State was in on him really early. And then all of a sudden he started doing some things out there that people said, hey, check this guy out. And I think people wanted to really check him out to begin with because Penn State was in on him. Like, oh, why are they in on him? And they started watching him saying, well, I can see why they're in on him. He's pretty good. And he got better and better and better. So the entire world now is saying, hey, let's get in there and see if we can get them. Well, what happened was the Allers, anytime somebody would call the house, the Allers would immediately call James or Mike or whomever and would say, hey, look, just let you know, they called, we took the call. We don't really know how, in a nice way, to tell them, like, don't call again. But, you know, we wanted to let you know that they did, and we have no interest at all. Like, they were up front the entire time. And, I mean, the entire time. I mean, transparent. Anytime anybody called, boom, they call right away. Just to let you know. That way you understand who's calling. We have no interest. Right? But, I mean, you want to talk about an easy recruitment of a guy. And, you know, it's, I mean, doesn't fall from far from the tree, does it? And then I've met his parents several times. Great people. He grabbed me nice, friendly, you know, outgoing, like, not overbearing, right? And then in the preseason, they brought the grandfather with them. Oh, what a terrific guy. But, yeah, I never really thought about the Ohio part of it. Going back to Ohio. Like there's some mystical, magical shield he has to overcome. I don't think he's going to sit there and dropping back to pass for the first time saying, hey, I'm in Ohio. How about that? So... But then again, you know, I think a little differently. So,
yes, but in this case, I'm with you. I guess more because I know the background of how of his recruiting process. For those that don't, then yeah, they'll probably use this as a talking point and thinking, how does this affect him going into playing at Ohio State in the biggest game of the year?
For goodness sakes, you got 3 hours of game day. You got 2 hours of a Big Ten, whatever it's called, Big Noon Kickoff, whatever it's called, right? And look, they're going to want to do stories, and he's coming back home, and blah, blah, blah. It's like, okay, great. So he's going to have to answer the questions then. All right? But, okay.
And it also just made, from everything that I've been seeing, I mean, the questioning started with the Ohio State media asking Ryan Day about this guy. It's almost like they're trying to put an indictment on him for not getting on him as fast as Penn State did. Which, in that case, I think I would have to agree because this guy's in your backyard and your rival came in and snooped him up.
Well, yeah, but okay. But so
which shows you that how good Penn State was as far as the recruiting process goes and how good they've been lately.
Here's the irony of it. Penn State's going to start a guy from Ohio, and Ohio State's going to start a kid from Pennsylvania.
Well, there you go. Yeah, that too. I mean, right? Okay. It's like they swapped.
And by the way, Penn State did recruit Kyle McCord. I mean, they recruited him. I mean, they tried. I mean, it was not for the lack of effort on their part. And it wasn't one of those, hey, they got in late on him and didn't get him. No, they just didn't get him. Okay. So, but that is ironic.
I mean, it's early, but I think Penn State did okay going with Aller instead of McCord.
They both did fine. You know, they both did fine. Now, would I rather have Drew? Darn right I would, you know, but then again, I know Drew.
So. Well, for me, I would rather Drew. Just, I mean, like I said, it's a short sample size of comparing the two of them because it's McCord's first year as the starter. But through the first six games of the year, yeah, I'd rather have Drew Aller. I think he's a better quarterback. I think he's the better quarterback in this matchup.
Yeah. All right. We'll take a break. We'll come back more in a moment. Neil Coulong today, but because he talks mostly about the Steelers, does nothing to calm Matt down.
He does think highly of the Eagles, so that does calm me down to some degree.
No, not anymore. Everybody's off the bandwagon.
Well, I mean, I can understandably this week, anytime you lose to the Jets, but
Tua may throw for 400. It's going to be awful. All right.
I don't totally disagree with that.
Just kidding. All right. We'll come back. More in a moment. Great to have you with us today on News Radio 1070 WKOK.
There's something to be said about a sale with a handshake. A service technician who really knows what he's doing. They can explain it in English what the problem is. There's nothing better than having that friend you could trust in the area. That's Sunbury Motors, where you get selection, knowledgeable salespeople, and prices that fit your budget, and more important, that friend you can trust. Welcome to Sunbury Motors, Kia, Ford, and Hyundai. You could shop other dealers and compare prices, but at Sunbury Motors, you get their lowest price promise. They research the current used vehicle market and guarantee their used car prices are the lowest. If you find a lower price, Sunbury Motors will beat it. Three dealers all in one. See their full new and pre-owned inventory at sunburymotors.com. Pick out a vehicle you like and schedule your test drive online. Follow them on Facebook. Sunbury Motors Ford and Hyundai, North 4th Street, Sunbury, and Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf.
The question?
I did. I'm sorry.
Yes, I said, what's your game this week if you have one?
I actually have Montoursville Sealands Grove this week, back on the sideline for TV.
Very good. Very nice. All right. All right. So, Populous will serve as the architect. Construction set to begin in January 2025, completed ahead of the 27 season. The 25 and 26, we'll see how the seating works out. Should work out, for the most part, pretty well. Winterization work happens before then, because they want to make sure if there's a home playoff game, if that's how it plays out next year, Penn State is fully capable of doing it.
This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now, from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Today's show is brought to you by Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury, Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15, Hummel's Wharf, online at sunburymotors.com. What great new inventory. They've got it. Ford, Kia, Hyundai. The best, with great warranties. Great pre-owned inventory with the Sunbury Motors Guarantee. They go over every vehicle. Terrific service department that makes sure that it's taken care of every step of the way. So when it comes time to buy your next SMC vehicle, the one you're trading in is in great shape. It is all at Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors, Kia, routes 11 and 15, Hummel's Wharf, and online at sunburymotors.com. The Tuesdays and a half hour that is always special on this show, we bring in Neil Coulong. Sir, welcome.
It's great to be here. Thank you, gentlemen, for having me.
So the Steelers, a mystifying team, went through at least a bye, so we're not so mystified. But we saw a weekend of football where we saw low scoring and teams expected to win that didn't. What were your thoughts watching it?
I felt overall on the week that it was kind of regression to the mean. The one game that did intrigue me the most was San Francisco and Cleveland. And I think a lot of people expected San Francisco to just roll over Cleveland. But really what we see in the Browns is what I thought was going to end up happening when Jim Schwartz came in there. That's a high-level defensive team. They're really good. Miles Garrett, obviously, is a fantastic player, but you watch them, their entire unit. They play a lot of guys. They go really deep into packages. There's a lot of things they can do, and they're really good at all of it. An amazing job by Schwartz with just one training camp and 6 weeks into the season to largely paralyze an offense that's just as versatile as Cleveland's defense is. And I think the message overall for the league is, you know, that this is not going to be a runaway for anybody. You know, I think we kind of thought that going into it, or at the very least, we don't know. In the first half of the season, it still kind of seems to be trial and error for most teams. It's not suggesting they don't play hard or anything, but they don't get to that Super Bowl form for a while. You know, you're really not seeing teams really running deep into seasons undefeated anymore. And Cleveland, for them to have done that with P.J. Walker playing pretty miserably, I mean, he did not have a very good game at all.
No.
It's a testament to how good of a defensive team they are. And San Francisco's no joke in three phases either. And Cleveland did enough to be able to take them out. They're a very impressive win.
Yeah, that's the interesting part. It's not just P.J. Walker, but Zach Wilson led the Jets in some way or shape or form over the Philadelphia Eagles. I want to ask you about Hurts for a moment. I felt Hurts last year, Neil, 90% of the time, I say played great. I mean, every game, 90% of the time, which I think is phenomenal to say that about any player. This year, I don't even think he's close to that. I've got him in the very good category to this point. Why do you think are you saying the same thing? And if so, why?
I think with Hurts, from what I'm seeing of him, it's not the end result. The aggregate result is what we're seeing. It's not surprising when you watch his games play to play. To me, the difference between last year and this year, it really is only a couple plays, it feels like. You know, and they're not getting Devontae Smith going downfield as well as they did. A.J. Brown being who he is, he's going to make the plays that he makes. But they had two guys doing that last year, and they got a lot more out of their tight end play as well. And I think Philadelphia is not too far off, but you're seeing a team that required a high level of precision to do the things that they do well. It took a lot of coordination to be able to do that. To throw a new coaching staff in there, you can see perhaps why the struggles are happening the way that they are. But Jalen Hurts was not a wide open end-to-end kind of player, you know, to mix my sports metaphors. It's more, not to say that he is not good, but they had phenomenal offensive coaching on that team last year. I think that is kind of the piece that's missing. Not series to series, but just a few plays throughout the game are really the difference. And in my opinion, anyway, they were able to get him on the edge with room to operate. He had the ability to run a little bit more or hit something deep, and he did a great job deciding which one of those to do. He didn't make mistakes with the ball the way he did against the Jets. Now, the Jets aren't a sleeper defense either. Let's give them some credit. But they beat him up pretty good. He fought hard. He put up a good effort, which suggests to me he is very close to being the type of player that he is. But just, you know, maybe that's really it. The difference between, you know, the high end guys and the mid guys are just a couple plays. I think we're seeing that on, you know, as a trend throughout the NFL right now. And Hurts is perhaps the best example of that. He's a better player, but I think they were able to put him in better positions last season. And through six games, let's, you know, keep in mind they're not failing. I mean, they're a 5-1 team.
Right.
But he has looked better. The offense has played better, and that, you know, is something they're going to need to get going in a hurry if they want to be back where they were.
It was also a weekend where, for the most part, scoring was down. Now, we all know defensive coordinators aren't out there playing golf in the offseason every single day getting the handicap down to 5. They're looking at tape of everybody so they can be ready for whatever they think the trend is at the moment. Why do you think that we're seeing scores down, especially with some of the talent we see on offense?
If we put it at the 10,000-foot level, teams are really just playing a lot more cover two. There are situations in which they'll go, you know, cover zero. They'll be a lot more aggressive, but you're not seeing kind of an all or nothing type of defense that ended up surrendering a lot of big plays. When you play back off of Patrick Mahomes, when he doesn't have the ability to escape horizontally, buy himself some time, and make some ridiculous you know, zero window throw 80 yards down the field, your scoring is going to come down to what's probably a little bit more reasonable. You know, to say it's down compared to where it was, which was at historical highs. I think that it's regressing back to the mean because teams are really intent on not allowing the big plays deep down the field. You're seeing safeties getting drafted higher than they were, perhaps not top five, but a good amount of them are going in the first round. And teams are committed to having two legit safeties playing deeper. Now, they'll move them around. You want to cover your slot, but it's that as well. You're getting more versatile linebackers that can help out with the slot. You're keeping more cornerbacks. There are more game-ready cornerbacks coming into the NFL. The money there is going up a little bit. I think with that in mind, they're able to keep two safeties back a lot more often to really try to take away those big plays. And it's teams in turn are throwing shorter, possessing the ball more, and playing more ball control, waiting for their opportunities to open up in order to score. Through 6 weeks, I mean, that's a lot that you'd have to flesh out, but it just feels like that watching it, because at the same time, you've seen a lot of sacks too. You know, defense, I think, is catching up compared to where it was. But schematically, there's a big emphasis on rolling coverage over the top and not allowing stuff outside the numbers.
Yep, Miami's the one that bucks this trend with what they've done to this point. What makes Mike McDaniel's offense, with Tua running it, and he made sure that when I talked to him in the spring, he emphasized that part. What makes that a difference?
I hate to be cliche and obvious, but speed. Those guys can move. They're fast. Everybody's fast in the NFL. You know, that can't be the difference between a team averaging 31 a game and one averaging 16. You know, there's got to be more to it than that. Mike McDaniel, he's a genius. The way that he sets up all of his players on the field, he's really committed to using everybody actively on every play. And I think that in turn, that in concert with the fact that you have some great run-after-catch receivers, that sets them up for big plays. And on top of that, they're a very effective running team. They've got great balance overall, and we've seen them put it together to significant results through this point in the season. A team that I don't know if there's a defense in the NFL that's really going to stop them, short of, you know, getting a second-half stand maybe at some point. But you got to almost think they're kind of the favorites just with what they can do offensively. There are, as you mentioned, that they're the ones that are bucking the trend. And a lot of it is, in my opinion, just this total offensive philosophy. They use everybody. They have great athleticism. There are great players on that team and a quarterback that knows where to go with the ball. To me, he looks a lot more confident. He's not missing stuff nearly as often as he had earlier in his career. And he's, you know, really just kind of keeping it simple. There's a great player here who's going to be here. I'm going to get him the ball there, and he's going to go a long way. They've eaten off that several times this year. I think we'll see that continue.
All right, yeah, and that's the interesting part. And I think they will continue with it because I think they've got something that is difficult to stop right now. We just went through another Chargers game where they lost. And of course, the topic of analytics comes up. Do we have to do a better job of staying away from the simple answer of analytics and understanding that a coach knows his personnel and he knows what the weaknesses are of his personnel, thus that he is more inclined maybe to go for it on fourth down because he knows he has weaknesses? And I'm thinking about Washington, Oregon, for example. You know, Dan Lanning got criticized, especially at the end of the game. I think he knew against Penix he had some holes back there, and this was his best shot to win, and he got criticized for it because he didn't make it.
Yeah, I mean, it's easy to criticize when it fails, and people oftentimes want to take the ultimate fourth down decision as a very binary black and white thing. And yes, the decision go or not go is there. But from there, do you have any idea how much time, preparation, planning goes into what you're going to call on fourth down? Give me numbers all you want. And the data scientists are going to tell you that. These numbers represent frequency over the course of every team over the course of the season. They do not represent anything specific in that moment. You have to take into account, among many things, weather, injuries, your specific matchups, but perhaps most importantly, tendency. What have you run before? I remember talking with you back in the day when Mike Tomlin went 0-for-5 against the Cowboys on two-point conversions.
Right.
You know what they were prior to that? Something like 75-80%.
Right.
Up to that point, the trend is they're going to hit 4 out of 5. Okay, well, they missed on all of them because that doesn't matter. It's about who you have matched up. It's about who you're going against and what can you do with what you have against them. I've said this a lot. My decision, this is just me, to go for 2 points on a play is going to be far less frequent if Kenny Pickett is my quarterback, whereas if Lamar Jackson is my quarterback, I'm going to go for 2 a lot more often. That has nothing to do with anything else except for the fact that I've got a great dual threat weapon in a short space. I'm going to build up around that player. When we get into analytics, and everybody's going to get into this, and perhaps, you know, Brandon Staley becomes the scapegoat of the whole thing, it's not just simple, you know, we're going to get this 60% of the time over the course of the season, because over the course of the season does not matter. This is not baseball. You don't play it like that. When you have 17 games, you have to play the situation. We know that because what do they do in baseball when they face a specific situation? They're not going with what would work for them with a plan over 162 games. They got to play in a 7-game series. So they're playing it based on the situation. My point in that is when you lock into just the statistics of it, you're really defeating the purpose of what the analytics are there to tell you anyway. It's to give you a sense of what is going to happen so you can plan out everything else around it. Just because this number is where it is not the reason to go for it. It suggests if we do this now and we miss, we have to go for it next time. Do we have a good chance of making both of these? The numbers say this. You know, it's a decision-making tool. It's not the ultimate factor, and it's not designed to be that. People just want the simple answer of something, and it doesn't really work that way.
Steelers go to SoFi, play the Rams. Coming up on Sunday, your thoughts on the matchup?
I was telling people earlier, I'm tired of predicting Steelers games. I know.
It's impossible.
Everything I pick is wrong. I thought Broderick Jones was going to be terrible against Baltimore. Literally the opposite of that. What I see on paper and film up to this point, the Rams have a very complicated scheme for the Steelers, the way that they play defense. I like the Rams throwing the ball in this game. They run crossers, slants, those types of things that tend to be effective against the Steelers defense, but not playing as much man as they did, probably due to the fact that they don't have, well, they have one good man cover corner who doesn't play all that much for some reason. The other ones are not going to be able to keep up with the Rams receivers, Cooper Kupp in particular, from the slot. If they play him in man, they're in trouble. So I would imagine they're going to run a lot of combos, high-low types of stuff that McVay loves to do. McVay loves this kind of a matchup. I would expect them to have a pretty solid offensive game. Can the Steelers keep up with, well, anybody in the league offensively? It's not the way that I see it, but we've seen them do some crazy things coming off of a bye as well. So, you know, maybe this is kind of a get-right game for them. It's not a strong talent-wise Rams team. But after saying all of that, I look at Aaron Donald versus Mason Cole, and I think that it's going to be a long game for the Steelers' offense. So for me, I think it's tough to go cross-country to win against just about anybody. And I think the Rams really have the matchup advantage in this. I don't think top to bottom they're a better team per se, but the Steelers just have weaknesses where the Rams have strengths. And it's a matchup game. Sometimes it just comes down to that.
My friend, always a pleasure making the show better like you always do.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me, guys.
Neil Coulong. Great work as always. Did nothing to make you feel better about that sad performance.
No, but I agree with his assessment of the Eagles' offense right now.
Maybe they should watch more tape and fight less. All right. What do you think of that?
Then there's that to some degree, yeah.
I want the ball. All right, what are you doing to get it? I mean, last year they were the no-drama team. Right? In fact, the only drama surrounding that team was you getting over-emotional.
Get the lingerie on the deck. Call the janitor.
We'll wrap it up in a moment here on News Radio 1070 WKIP. Am I too calm for you this week? Is that what's bothering you?
No, this is about what I expected. Except you can't mow the lawn on game day this week because you'll be in the hotel room in Columbus.
No, I cut it. I cut it last night.
Oh, there you go.
No, I cut it last night. Looks good. I had nothing to do with it. I just drove it back and forth. But it looks good.
No, but I like your landscaping. You got a nice yard.
Yeah. So, the heck. Yeah. I go about answering the questions I get. Now, most of them are the same. I knew going into the week I'd get a lot of requests because it's not like, you're going to call James Franklin. He's going to pick up the phone and go, hey, you know. Although James and I had a pretty good time at Jack's expense last week about when we called him on Thursday. We called him together. And he didn't pick up. We're like, what are you, screening our calls? Franklin Jones. What's going on? That was funny. Did you hear the postgame show?
That I missed. I didn't get a chance to hear that part.
You got to listen to it. You have access to it. You need to listen to the beginning of it.
Your home for news.